Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. This is the intersection of sexuality and reality. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth. Another great episode for you today. We are talking about, often we talk about, when we're talking the LGBT spectrum, we discuss lesbian, gay, bisexual, and trans. Those four topics often are what we highlight when we have an LGBT discussion. But today's episode is a little different. We're extending a little further down the alphabet and hitting the asexual part of the LGBTQIA. And that is what we're talking about on today's Latter Gay Stories interview. Grateful to have Chad and Matt with us. Chad Merrill and Matt Weber, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
You're a couple.
Yes, we are.
I am really excited about this interview because this is a topic that probably doesn't get a lot of attention. And I personally have friends who identify as asexual, and it's difficult to really fully understand exactly what their process is and exactly where they're heading because it's not overly popular. And maybe I shouldn't say overly popular. Maybe I should say it's not talked about as often, asexuality. So I'm grateful, Chad, that you were willing to jump into the Latter Gay Stories podcast as a willing participant and brought Matt along with you to join in the conversation because I think it's a it's a vital conversation that needs to be had. So thank you.
Absolutely, thank you. I'm happy to share my story.
So let's start. We don't know much about you two, so we'll start with you, Matt. Tell us, Chad, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about just a little background, who you are, what you do.
Absolutely. So I was born and raised in the Mormon church and was very, very, you know, even Peter Priest had grown up. I grew up in a very LDS environment, not just in my family, but the community, you know, it was a very churchy environment, which I loved. You know, I loved the gospel and I loved being a part of that. I always, you know, deacons, quorum, teachers, priests was always one of the ones that stood up and stood out and was early preparing the sacrament. I feel like I had a very normal Mormon upbringing. There were a couple moments where I thought maybe I'm a little bit different, maybe I'm a little bit outside the norm, but that didn't really come to a head until a little bit later in my life.
Great, and we'll jump in and talk about that. Mm-hmm. What do you do for a living? What do you do for work?
Currently, I'm actually a car warranty auditor, so it's super exciting. If someone's car breaks down, I help them find the payment to cover it.
You're not the guy that calls me all the time that says your car's warranty is expired.
Absolutely not.
Thank
no.
You. This interview almost got really short.
The exciting thing is I'm not going to be doing that for too much longer. I was recently accepted into a master's program for creative writing. And so I'm going to be starting in that in the fall that I'm very excited about.
Matt?
I teach mathematics, so hopefully that doesn't cut short the interview.
Yeah, geez. Everybody's dreaded
math teacher.
They've already fallen asleep.
I'm a college-level mathematics instructor, professor.
Matt, did you grow up in the church? So what's that story like?
Yeah, my parents are both converts, and I grew up in the church.
Okay. Chad, let's start a little bit. Let's begin with your story. Let's go through growing up. Obviously, you probably didn't identify as asexual as a youth, but let's talk a little bit about your young men's experience or maybe even start at the point where you realized, I'm different. There's something about me that's different.
Yeah, that probably would have been right around age 12, 13 that I started thinking, maybe there's something going on that's a little bit different. And that actually came in the form of having questions about if I had same gender attraction or was gay. There were a couple moments I can identify where I just had these feelings, kind of a curiosity towards, you know, other guys in my grade. And it wasn't necessarily a super strong feeling. And so it was able for me to just kind of say, okay, we're going to push this to the side for now and not worry about it. It was just, I had these little inklings like maybe that's something that I need to be thinking about. So as I got a little bit older, I was in a very Mormon environment. So, you know, my friends weren't sleeping around or talking about having sex at all. So I thought I was having the same experience as everyone. To be really brief about it, asexuality essentially means not experiencing sexual attraction. And so I thought, you know, we went on fun dates, group dates, never did anything promiscuous, you know, and I thought everyone's just having the same experience as I am. We're just having fun together. But there were a couple moments where I thought maybe same gender attracted, but I had a, didn't have a hard time pushing that away for the time being.
So how is it that you started to develop those feelings or work into this understanding of maybe who and what you are?
Mm-hmm. That is a really good question. And it didn't all come together until actually after my mission. I had these little maybe clues, you could call them, I guess, when I was a teenager about who exactly I was, what my sexuality was. But it didn't come together until, you know, after my mission when I was in college. And I even heard the term asexuality. And I thought, what is that? Does that fit what I really am?
So I think that leads us into a good discussion we can spend a few minutes on. Mm-hmm. What were those signs? You said that there were a few little clues. Mm-hmm. For someone listening to this podcast who might be recognizing things as well, what were those clues in your world? What started drawing attention?
I will say sometimes I would have friends who were guys who would say, oh, you know, this person looks really attractive or cute. And I'm like, oh, well, I mean, they look fine to me, you know, whatever. Or there was always the law of chastity discussions in young men's, the dreaded Sunday, right? And there seemed to be certain aspects of that that didn't necessarily apply to me. I remember, you know, they would talk about pornography use as being a serious temptation, you know, but just don't look at it. And I thought, it was just never appealing to me to even think about looking up pornography. But it seemed like it was a temptation that everyone was just batting away. So there were little things like that where I thought, I don't know if I really necessarily fit the experience other people are having. I hope that answers the question a little bit.
Yeah, it makes great sense. What about you, Matt? At what point did you realize I might be different?
Oh, well, middle school and maybe late elementary school, I seemed to want the attention more of my friends who were boys and wasn't as interested in securing the affections of girls. I just wanted to have pals, I guess. I didn't know how to describe it. Sexuality wasn't really a thing on my mind. It was just I wanted to be around the boys. And then through middle school and high school is when I started to get a sense that there was a sexual component to it. But I always thought it would fade away. Of course, it'd have to fade away to be, it was just an adolescent thing, a hormone thing. I didn't know what to think of it. But I knew it didn't fit within the Mormon scheme of things.
I think this is a great topic. Where you both were active in the church, how does that play into trying to understand your sexuality? Were you using the law of chastity lessons as the tool to combat those feelings? What was that experience like?
That's a really good question. I think growing up, my interpretation of the church was as a checklist. You know, for young men, you get the priesthood, you get baptized. There's these things you want to check off the list, right? And I thought if there was anything unusual about me and my sexuality, then that would interfere with that checklist. So it was a little bit nerve-wracking to have to face that and think, is this going to change my interaction with the church and potentially my eternal salvation? So there was definitely a battle there, even at a fairly young age.
Did you use the church? I know this is a little bit of a loaded question, but did you use, you prefaced this by saying that you were Peter Priesthood and did everything right. Were you using methods within the church or righteousness or activity in the church to try to overcome those feelings or trying to become more normal or hoping that they, I would hate to say like this reparative or conversion therapy idea, but did you sense that growing up?
I actually didn't. I know some people say that they definitely did veer that way, but I just really enjoyed participating in the church and the community that I felt there. And I didn't see it as necessarily my activity was connected to combating my sexuality. So I just enjoyed what I was doing in the church.
What about you, Matt?
I would say the same. I was immersed in a culture and a way of thinking about the world and the next life and the life before this. And I had this image of what was and what wasn't. And my life was, you know, through college, it was mostly a series of going through, checking one box after the next, to as a measure of growing up. And I'd never second questioned any of it. I didn't doubt any of the boxes I had to check. Some of the, you know, such as doing a mission and going to BYU, these are all things that were just sort of laid before me, and I accepted tacitly without really thinking about it. I never thought of the church as using the church as a means for changing myself. That thought never entered my mind, that the church was just a part of my life. However, I did not think that I would ever be in a gay relationship. I think in the back of my mind, I thought this would be something that would either suppress my whole life or would go away, or I didn't necessarily think I would do anything in particular to make that happen. I just thought it would.
Did you think it was because you had convinced yourself you didn't want to drive down that, because it was quote-unquote wrong, it was against the design of the church? Or is this a just personal intrinsic feeling that you didn't see yourself in that relationship?
The latter, I think. You know, I saw myself as being married and having kids and like your typical poster Mormon family.
Did either one of you have bishop interviews or have this discussion with an ecclesiastical leader for direction or understanding, maybe from a church leader or young men's leader or scout leader, to say, hey, this is what's going on?
No, I kept this to myself until I was in my 30s.
Okay, that's a great venture. I want to jump down that one because I think there's a great story there in understanding why you waited so long. What about you, Chad?
Never when I was a teenager. After my mission, when I started really identifying and coming out, I did talk to my bishop, but that was quite a ways into my story.
Should we jump in there? Should we jump to missions?
You both
served missions.
We did, yeah.
Where did you serve?
I served in Pocatello, Idaho.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What about you, Matt?
Bordeaux, France.
Oh, oui.
Vive la France.
My extent of French came from Home Alone.
Oh, yeah.
Laissez-en comprendre. That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 90s kids will get those. Yeah. Pocatello, Idaho.
Yeah. So my mission, it was kind of a unique experience in that almost everyone you talk to, you know, they say the best 2 years, and it was so wonderful for growth and exciting things. I had a little bit of a different experience. My mission was a huge trial for me, and not necessarily coming to grips with sexuality on my mission. I had actually decided right before I left. I had a year of college and I took a psychology class and we had talked about sexuality. And based on these discussions, I sat down and I thought about it and I thought, you know what, I'm not gay. And that was my decision. You know, I've decided and that's how I'm gonna be, I'm not gay. So I went on my mission with that mindset and didn't bother me too much. But I did have some pretty serious mental health issues while I was on my mission, dealing with some serious anxiety that I just had a hard time communicating about, and so I had a hard time getting the help that I needed. And when you're in the throes of something like that, it's very, very hard to feel the spirit or have a lot of self-worth. And so the work suffered in that regard. I worked really, really hard on my mission, but I just felt like I wasn't getting a lot back, and that took a huge toll on me. In fact, it kind of, like I said, I had this checklist idea of the church. And when I went on my mission and it didn't do what I was anticipating it to do for me, I realized that checklist wasn't maybe going to work for me. And that there wasn't just a one size fits all. And that my story might be a little bit different.
So you mentioned some forms of anxiety. Mm-hmm. Was there a correlation between the anxiety and this feeling that you'd convinced yourself, I'm not gay, so I'm not... Was there a tie there? Were those two connected? Maybe just answer that. Was there a connection between, I've already told myself I'm not this, mm-hmm. therefore I'm not this. I've switched the light. I've turned off this light switch. But yet I still feel like the light is on. Was that connected to the anxiety, or was there something else?
I don't know if that necessarily was consciously connected. I will say there was definitely feelings of not necessarily being worthy to serve a mission, which I think most missionaries feel at to some extent, because there's so many things that you're supposed to be doing and that are required of you and having this exact obedience. And I've always been very, very structured in feeling that I had to be perfect. And so that definitely, I think, was an aspect of not feeling perfect enough to be a missionary, and that the wanting to try and do everything and be that perfect missionary and realizing that I couldn't necessarily, that kind of triggered the anxiety. And I think realizing my sexuality could have been definitely a huge part of that.
Makes sense. So Matt, you, now you've said you didn't come out until later in life, but let's talk a little bit about your mission experience. Obviously the feelings don't go away, the attractions, the inherent idea and knowledge that I am who I am. So what was the mission life like for you?
I was just immersed in the work. I didn't think much about sexuality. You know, I had crushes during the mission like any normal person would when they are around something that they are attracted to. The work in France was pretty slow and tedious. A lot of knocking on doors and talking to random people in the streets. They were not my favorite ways to engage people in discussions about the church. I burned out about halfway through, stopped caring a little bit about doing the work and just avoided it as much as I could for a while. But sexuality was never on the forefront of my mind during this part of my life. It was just getting through, finishing it.
Makes sense.
Now, I loved France and I love French people. It's just knocking doors and talking to random people in the streets was not my thing.
What years did you serve?
2011 to 2013.
Sooner than that.
So I was just thinking, I served my mission in Michigan as well, and I was not a door knocker. Mm. I get it. In fact, I remember my mission president putting me with a companion who was the door knocker. Mm-hmm. I was the member missionary worker, the one who loved interacting with people and engaging and making things happen in these little branches. He was a door knocker, and we had to knock every door in town. So I get it. Yeah. I get those. If I had to spend all my time with the door knocker, how quickly I would have just frazzled and checked out of my mission so easily. Side note. We could do a whole podcast about mission stories, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
All right, so for you, Chad, you come home from your mission. Things are a little crazy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, identifying with some feelings of anxiety and reaching out. Where do you go? What happens?
That was a great question. I came home and I thought, where do I go? You know, what do I do next? My family had actually moved while I was on my mission. And so it was almost like being transferred to a new area. I felt like I was completely in an environment that I wasn't super familiar with. So I ended up going, I did a year of school before my mission. I went back and did another year. And it took some time for me to just get to a place where I was healthy emotionally and mentally. So that was my first step. And then my next step, because my mission had kind of changed my view of where my place might be in the church, I had to figure out how I was going to stay engaged in the church and still make that work for me. And the huge part of that was figuring out what my sexuality was. And it was kind of a surprise one day. I was my second year in college, right after my mission, and I came home one day and I just had this realization that there was a guy that I knew that I was feeling some attraction towards. You know, I had definitely a pretty major crush on him, and I came home and I realized this and I thought, oh, what does this mean for me? I had never felt anything that strong before. That was when I kind of sat myself down and said, okay, at the very least I know I experience same gender attraction. I guess I'm gonna move forward and identify as gay. And I was surprisingly okay with that. And I think part of that was because my view of myself and my role had kind of been shattered already. And so I was picking up the pieces and trying to figure out, where do I go from here? And that was just a new piece to put into the puzzle. And as I started researching and learning more, I stumbled across asexuality and realized that was a better fit for me.
Let's talk about that. What pieces of the puzzle started to fit? What were those signs that said, that could be me?
Yeah. So one of them was when you get home from your mission, the next thing that Mormon culture expects you to do is get married.
Right.
And so I started dating, right? That was just the next thing on the box. And I realized I didn't know what to do next, but that was what I just made sense to me. So I gave it a go. And I realized very, very quickly that my dating experience wasn't necessarily leading to anything meaningful. I saw a lot of friends that were getting engaged and married, and I was going on a lot of dates with great girls, but I just realized each date wasn't going anywhere for me. So that was definitely a huge sign, I think, to realize dating is working for other people, but not for me. And then I don't think I really thought about asexuality until I had this experience where I had this big crush on a guy, and I started researching more about LGBTQ issues and came across this, and everything just kind of clicked into place when I saw this. I thought, you know what, I haven't been experiencing this in the past with men or women. You know, that sexual attraction was always, when I had crushes growing up, I thought of it, if you can think back to second and third grade, you know, you have these little crushes where maybe you swap Valentines, but it's essentially pretty meaningless at heart. I felt that for the most part, that was what my crushes continued to be as I was a teenager. And so looking back and realizing maybe my experience, it recolored my experience. I realized I just wasn't experiencing the same sexual attraction as others.
And as those puzzle pieces started coming together, you started to form the picture.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And things started to work. What was the state of your mental health at that point?
I was on the upswing at this point. I was doing a lot better. So it was a good time for me to work on this other project of who am I sexually. And I hope this is a good time to talk about asexuality and what it is. Because that's what I was learning at this time.
Yeah, let's jump into it, because I think that's that is exactly what I wanted to focus this podcast on, because
good.
So many people are confused by, well, it must just be some alphabet soup. Mm-hmm. There are very real people in that soup. So teach us.
Okay, let's go. The first thing, the definition is honestly really very simple in theory, but you know, there's always complications in individuals. So asexual essentially means that someone who doesn't experience sexual attraction. And that doesn't mean someone who has no sexual feelings ever, or someone who doesn't get crushes ever. It just means that the sexual aspect of attraction is just kind of missing there. And as I looked into this, I started doing a lot of research. There's a whole spectrum of asexuality. So I began to realize that I kind of identified as asexual, but that I had romantic leanings towards same-gendered people. So within asexuality, there are some people who are homo-romantic and feel that they can have a romantic connection with someone of the same gender, or heteroromantic, or biromantic, or even aromantic, where they're just not interested in having any kind of romantic connection at all. But with that, with asexuals, that romantic connection generally comes without the sexual attraction. And I think a lot of people, because that's such a common experience to be sexually attracted to someone, have a hard time wrapping their head around not that, you know? And I realized that in the reverse, that because I'm not experiencing that sexual attraction, I realized I had a hard time understanding what everyone was so worked up about and feeling towards each other. I like to think of it as this way, though. I have an analogy that I think fits. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. Everyone's had this experience where you're really, really hungry and you open up the fridge and there's literally nothing in the fridge that looks good to you to eat, but you're still hungry. That's kind of what my experience with asexuality has been. I've wanted that kind of connection. I've wanted to find someone who I felt I could have a meaningful relationship with. But every time I opened the fridge, I felt like there wasn't anything there for me. But then I found something in the fridge that I liked.
Oh, how did you meet?
I'll let you take this one.
Through a mutual friend. Someone who knew Chad from college and who I had known just for a few months. And it was through that person that we met.
And you obviously had no idea he was asexual, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's true. I had suspected gay, though. Just because of our mutual friend, tended to associate with people on the spectrum.
Well, let's hope. Like, if I'm gonna ask this guy out, if not, that could be awkward.
Yeah. Well, I didn't ask him out.
So we had been around each other a couple different times at parties or events. We were in some similar circles. And it wasn't until one specific night that we just started talking at, you know, our friend's birthday party and realized we had a lot in common.
It was the day that he overheard me outing myself to someone. Mm-hmm.
Oh, hold on a second.
Not the first.
Okay, so not the first coming out. Okay.
This is the first day that he discovered that I was gay. That's when he decided to try to.
And that's when I thought, you know, maybe there's a little potential here. The funny thing is, too, right before we kind of made that connection, I had been off dating for quite a while because I thought, you know what, I'm asexual. This dating isn't working for me, and that's fine. And I was excited for being single the rest of my life.
It gets exhausting hauling the refrigerator around.
Exactly. I was like, forget the fridge. I'm just going to do my own thing. And one day I remember very distinctly, I woke up and I thought, if an opportunity came up with another man, would I want to take that? And I thought, yeah, I think that's something I would be willing to try. And that weekend, Matt shows up and told me he was gay, essentially. And I thought,
I overheard
him talking about his sexuality. And I thought, I don't necessarily believe in coincidences. So this seemed like, it seemed like a good sign.
You're like, and I forgot the fridge. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
So you approached Matt?
More or less. Yeah. We had this long conversation and I texted him a few days later and I said, I really like the conversation we had. When can we continue it? And continue we did through several different events and getting together.
Great story so far.
Mm-hmm.
A little fascinating. Actually, a lot fascinating. Let's talk. I want to jump into your world a little bit, Matt, where you begin, because I want to discuss with you, Chad, lots of the misconceptions surrounding mm-hmm. asexuality. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you had to learn this as well. You had to learn this part of Chad. Maybe let's talk a little bit about your understanding of asexuality, if any, and what that process was like for you.
Right. Well, I still don't have a good working. I'm a math guy, so I like definitions, concise, clear mm-hmm. definitions. So I don't have a working one for asexuality. Being with Chad is giving me experiences to help formulate in my own mind what it means. From one perspective, you could argue that I've felt asexual at times in my life because I also embraced being single for many years. I gave up dating girls, you know, in college, and so it was many years that I didn't even bother, and I just thought, just live my life single, you know, have travel, take advantage of these opportunities that are going to be mine, not to be tied down by family or mortgages or other things. And over that, through those years, in a way, I've trained myself to not fall in love with people. The few times I did in college, it was almost all through college where I had my most heartbreaking experiences, feeling something for someone that I'd never voiced. And I got to the point where I just trained myself well not to be attracted to people or to have other outlets for it and just not to involve another human being. So I can relate a little bit with the asexuality. It became very few and far between where I would feel attraction to someone. So on that sense, I understand the refrigerator analogy very well. But then I also secretly thought that Chad's declaration of asexuality might have been a cover for a way to cope with actually feeling gay, but trying to be in the Mormon world, it's easier to say, I'm just asexual. And I'm not trying to be your psychologist here. I don't know how Chad feels about what I'm saying right now, but mm-hmm. for a while I did think that it was just easier to say asexual than to say gay in our Mormon culture. So obviously I don't feel you are rarely attracted to guys, but you are.
Occasionally.
So you're,
and we can,
you know, you're gay who dabbles rarely. Yeah.
We could,
in a way, I felt the same way. I wasn't attracted to every single boy I saw, and to the point of wanting to ask them out. It was more rare that I would feel attraction enough so as to cause some sort of stirring in the heart. So,
and I
am
will
I
say,
asexual in the same way?
We don't treat our relationship as an asexual dating a gay. We just treat it as a relationship.
Yeah.
I wanted to comment about that because I think the beauty in the relationship is that you have found ways to make it work, mm-hmm. which is the point in dating. And the point often, and we could turn this now into Sally, Jesse, Raphael about like the crazy dating stories or Maury Povich, but often we forget that the whole purpose of dating is to determine long-term compatibility and where our matches, where the puzzle pieces align. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good that we don't have to follow a norm. It's good that we don't have to follow a strict set of rules saying this fits with this only. And if those two are not compatible, then therefore there's no chance of something working. So I actually enjoy this discussion because it's proving the point that here I am and here I am. And we are going to blend our situations together. And if they're compatible, then they become more long-term. And that's what the relationship is giving you the opportunity to do. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a little bit about your do's and don'ts. Yeah, we discussed this a little earlier.
We did.
Off camera. The do's and don'ts about this topic.
So asexuality, once I realized that this was kind of my experience, and there's a lot of terms with asexuality. We talked about the romantic scale. There's also people who will say only very, very rarely do they experience sexual attraction. I'll say I've probably been attracted to maybe two people in my entire life. So maybe that's a better fit for me, is this kind of demi-romantic or demisexual is the term. I even once took a Kinsey test because I thought, what even am I? You know, this is going to give me the answer about where I fall on this spectrum. And I took this test to see, you know, where exactly. And the result I actually got was, you are not a sexual being. The test actually told me that. And I thought, okay.
So you were like a negative, either a plus 7 or a negative 1?
Yeah, I'm just off the scale, apparently.
I don't know how Kinsey would rate you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The scale, I guess, just didn't necessarily apply.
Did it give you a number?
It did not give me a number. It said, you are not a sexual being based on your responses. So I thought, okay, I guess.
I'm dating an amoeba.
You are.
I thought, okay, well, we'll just kind of take this and figure it out on our own. But as I started identifying as asexual and coming out, I think almost anyone who identifies as any kind of LGBTQ will have some similar experiences. But I found when I told people I was asexual, everyone wanted to ask about personal things. You know, I had a couple questions. From strangers even, or people I didn't know very well, I was asked if I was still a virgin. I was asked if I had been abused as a child. You know, I'd been asked, are you sure you're not just gay and you're just kind of trying to cover it up with this label? Which is kind of what Matt thought, initially.
I thought it too, that's why I led you into the question earlier in the interview.
Yeah, and I've, there's all kinds of things I've been asked. If I masturbate and how that fits into things. And these are from people that I'm, you know, not super familiar with, so these aren't topics that I necessarily want to talk about. And I've also been asked a lot, what is that? Which is, I think, is an understandable response, except if you've seen this podcast, because now you know asexual mm-hmm. people just don't experience sexual attraction or very, very rarely or in very, very small amounts.
Is there a correlation between not feeling sexual attraction and not, I don't want to say this harshly, but mm-hmm. just not being satisfied? Like looking, so could it be argued, yeah, I'm looking inside of the fridge and I just don't like anything in the fridge. Mm-hmm. Or is there something a little deeper than that? And I hope there's something a little deeper.
Yeah.
But for someone who's listening to this interview, they could say, oh, well, he's just picky.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
That's a really great question. I've definitely had moments where I felt kind of a desperation to fill that void that I was feeling in my life of, you know, this whole sexual, and a lot of people have healthy, fulfilling sexual experiences, and there were points where I thought I was desperate to fill that, and I could think of no possible way for me to satisfy that. I went through every possible scenario and I thought, based on where I am in my life, I just feel there's no possible way for me to satisfy this. And that's a very discouraging thing. I just couldn't find anything that felt that it would click with me, you know? whether men, women, whatever kind of experience. So I think it's a little bit more than just being picky. It's that there's not a lot that really could have done anything for me, if that makes more sense.
Yeah, it is, the horsepower isn't there to move that boat forward, maybe. Mm-hmm. Not that there was an intention to keep the momentum or thrust away. It's just it didn't create the thrust to move it.
Asexuality is not an intention to be celibate or to not date or to, you know, step away. It's just an inability to create that sexual experience. So I definitely had moments where I thought, oh, it would be so nice to be in a romantic relationship, or I enjoy holding hands or cuddling, and that's awesome. But it wasn't, there's not very many, like I said, it wasn't until meeting Matt that I found something I thought in the fridge that I thought, okay, this could really be a fit for me. This could be something that I actually was looking for the whole time.
What was it about Matt?
That is an awesome question.
What isn't it?
Oh, I love it. I love the response.
I think,
and humble, you should add.
So humble.
Make sure humble's at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm. It's tricky because I think when people have these feelings of love and romance, it's hard to put a specific reason on that. There were so many things when we had this conversation that I just really, really enjoyed about him. And more than that, I felt that I had only known him for a little bit, but I knew right away that there was something in him that I could see right through. I guess you could call it his spirit. And that in that spirit, there was something beautiful that I wanted to know more about. That was a really special experience for me. And then to come to learn and know him even more since then.
Same question for you, Matt. What did you see in Chad? Besides humility.
Well, he's cute. He's a good writer. I mean, there are a lot of little things that were, you know, piqued my interest. And it's only matured since I've gotten to know him better. The things I like about him is that he's got a good heart. He's got a good intellect. He's able to challenge me on things and point out when I'm saying silly stuff. And he's a good whole person, his whole being.
All the elements of a symbiotic relationship.
Is attractive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hate to want to jump back, but I want to jump back a little bit back to your story, Matt. Because I want to get to the coming out experience a little bit, because I know we kind of left that off, where you come out later in life. Because I think there's a story there, I want to try to understand what either compelled or what factors brought you to finally come out in your 30s.
Well, it was heartbreak over a boy that finally made me realize I had to talk to somebody to get help. And that somebody was a bishop. I guess I felt the weight of dealing with this by myself for so long, especially over one particular individual, I was causing even more heartache. Finally broke me and got me to the point where I decided to get help. And initially I thought the help was, okay, now that you know, fix me. I can't do this on my own. Maybe you've got the secret and you can fix me. And that was my mindset going into coming out, was getting help to change me, since I couldn't do it by myself. And that eventually led to just being comfortable talking with other people, and then slowly family knew, then close friends knew, and people who I had confused for many years, because I was not open to them and my behavior was confusing, I told them so they would stop being confused for their sake. And it was sort of a gradual. I never did a large, hey, I'm gay. Mm-hmm. It was very gradual, little by little, person by person.
How did your family react?
They are all very supportive and understanding, and continue to support me now, which had all of them, even my parents.
And your bishop, how was that experience?
That was good. He was a family counselor, and he was supportive to the extent that he wanted to get me the help I needed to. And I think both of us thought that help meant some sort of reparative help.
So did you travel down the conversion therapy?
No, never did, no.
Amen.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Mm-hmm. I only got involved with the church leaders to a very small extent, and they sort of just let me be. They didn't get in my business, and I didn't continue to seek help from them. I think it was just I needed that one moment in my time. I just needed to open my mouth and say it to somebody.
Get it out.
Yeah.
And then from there, maybe similar even to Chad's story, was there, so he experienced this anxiety throughout his mission, and, mm-hmm. and that started building up. And once the coming out experience or the acknowledgement of who and what I am, once that was able to flush through, did you experience the same relief, the same aha moment, turn a new leaf, become something different?
No, I felt changed when I finally told myself I was going to stop trying to change myself.
Great
this
point.
Whole weight went off my shoulders at that point. And if I tell myself that, if that's not a gift from God, then what is? Because this weight, this burden was gone. But it was not the burden of being gay, it was the burden of trying to change yourself that was gone.
That's profound. There's a lot of wisdom in that. I wish more people listening to this podcast who are closeted could grasp what you just said. The releasing all of the expectation and acknowledging the authenticity.
Yeah, well, we tell each other that our burden, our challenge isn't that we're gay or asexual or whatever, but it's that we're that and Mormon. Mm-hmm. That's the challenge. We're brought up in a culture and society that doesn't embrace it or support it or wants to minimize us.
What are your current feelings of the church or activity rate or where does the church fit
in the world?
I found
it's at safe arm's reach.
Explain that.
I can touch it, but it's not up in my business. Like, I'm still involved. I have a calling and I play the piano, which I love doing. And I like to believe in things that are positive about the next life. I want to believe that we keep going on and we get to be reunited with loved ones. All of that sounds great. But largely I'm agnostic. Like, I can't say I know those things are true, despite having spiritual experiences. But I'm careful not to blow up a spiritual experience into something that encompasses more than what that feeling was about. So I don't take one little feeling I had while reading the Book of Mormon and say, everything is true now because of that one feeling. I think more like that was a feeling about that idea. And so I'm largely agnostic. I think the church has a lot of great things about it, and there's things about its culture I wish would be different, and that I'm sometimes very vocal against about their culture. But I keep it at a safe distance.
Manageable.
Yeah.
What about you, Jen?
I'm also definitely still engaged in the church. Still active, still go, and there's a couple of reasons for that. I mean, obviously, as I said, on my mission and realizing that I was, you know, LGBTQ, you realize your relationship with the church has to shift a little bit. And so I realize there are some things that I just don't necessarily love or support about the culture. But as I continue to go to church, I continue to have positive experiences overall. And I thought, as long as I still definitely believe in God, and I believe that there's a plan. And so as long as I can find some kind of communication that's meaningful to me with deity in attending church, I'm going to keep doing it.
How are you received in your wards? Are they aware that you're in a relationship?
No, not really. My bishop is, mm-hmm. but my ward is not, because Chad goes to his ward and I go to my ward, and so we're not seen together by our fellow parishioners. But my bishop, he's fully aware and he lets me be. He doesn't come after me or ask about my personal life. He, at least not in a witch hunt way, you know. He's curious, just in a very friendly way. That's the sense I have.
Very great point, because sometimes we get into these ideas, especially what we hear on social media and what kind of passes through this world. But there are very affirming bishops and stake presidents in mm-hmm. the church. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they all are. If they all were, we wouldn't have this great thing called Bishop Roulette that exists,
yes.
where you spin the wheel and decide what you and realize what your fate is in terms of a church leader. But there are some very, very progressive and understanding bishops.
Right.
And so I'm happy to hear that you have one. What is your bishop like?
I actually recently moved into a new ward, so I haven't had a lot of experiences with this bishop, but I've had some really awesome bishops through my experience. I've had bishops that have come to events that were themed LDS and LGBTQ. That was really cool to see them being supportive of that. The first bishop that I came out to as asexual, he said, okay, are you telling me that you're same gender attracted? And I said, well, that's an aspect of it. And he said, okay, well, that I understand and can deal with. So, not
just
everyone...
tell me you're gay, please.
Yeah.
So, nothing else, just gay. All right.
So much easier for
me. So I said, okay, like if
gay,
that's
I can
the term that makes the most sense to you, I guess we can kind of operate under that. But I've had bishops that have been very supportive of LGBTQ issues, which has been really nice.
What about friends? How have your friends taken those who are in the church and those who are outside of the church? How what are those social experiences and relationships like?
I'll go first, yeah. So it's been really interesting to see Matt talks about how sometimes we've had to have kind of two coming outs. The first, you know, you come out as gay or asexual or whatever, and then now that we're in a relationship, we've kind of had to come out again, especially to our LDS friends. I even had kind of a meet the boyfriend dinner party for a lot of my friends, and I told them about Matt, and then I said, okay, time to come meet him. You'll love him, I promise. So, and everyone that I've talked to has been really supportive and encouraging, which has been awesome, both inside and outside of the church. And part of it is, you know, it's once you meet Matt, it's hard not to enjoy his company.
He's infectious. Yeah. And humble again.
Yeah. So humble.
Yeah. Maybe the most humble.
Mm-hmm.
How on earth did you even qualify for this, Chet?
I got lucky, I guess. I don't know.
My friends have been very supportive, too. No one has suggested that I reconsider. They've all, of course, they all like Chet as well. Mm-hmm.
I will say I had a comment that I thought it was kind of an almost an aha moment for me when a friend made a comment, and she said, I had told her, you know, I'm in this relationship, and she said, okay, I understand being, I don't understand is how you can be in the church, actively involved, and also be in a same-sex relationship. She said, that just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand how you can have both of those. And I had this moment where I realized, you know, growing up in a very church environment, there was a lot of internalized homophobia. I mean, obviously, you know, I told myself, oh, I'm not gay. I don't experience this for so long. But I began to realize it took a big shift for me to come outside of that view. And there's a lot of people who just haven't had an opportunity to have that shift. And so I think if they understood what we felt, what men they really feel, and they understood that it's just the same kind of love and affection as any other relationship, that isn't a question people would ask.
I don't recall what podcast we discussed this, but I would assume that this principle applies in your relationship as well. When you remove this idea of just the sexual nature of the relationship and add elements like compassion and compatibility and love and companionship, does that make the relationship different, or does that better help the audience understand what asexuality is?
Yeah. So when you eliminate the fact that we're both men, right? It's just like any other relationship. And I remember going into this relationship thinking, oh, it's going to be weird. It's going to be different, because most of the models I had had for positive relationships were heterosexual. You know, in the church, that's the norm. And we went into this relationship, and I thought, this is just like anything I've ever been taught should be what a relationship should be like. It just happens to be we're both men, but it's the same.
I didn't know if you were going to comment. Sorry.
No. Amen.
I will say, amen. Though, I think regarding asexuality, a similar thing applies. That, like, I had this friend who said, I don't understand. There's a lot of people who might not understand why we want to be engaged in the church and still be in a relationship. But that doesn't mean that they can't honor that choice. You know, there's a lot of people who might not understand what exactly asexuality is, but I've had to think about it a lot, about what is the best label that fits me. And even if people might not understand what I'm experiencing, they can honor that that's a reality and that maybe they don't understand it right away, but that it is something that's real for me and for us.
I think that's a great point, especially in terms of when we begin to discuss judgment and people's role in their responsibility of judging, which is not their responsibility. So often it's one of these discussions about just stay in your lane. Mm-hmm. Allow us to work out our own personal salvation. Allow us to experience these things on our own. And let us seek our level. And let us figure out exactly what works for us. So a great lesson in that. Not necessarily a rebuke to those around. Saying,
I want to make an amendment to that, though. That if you have a question, feel free to ask. You know, I had this friend who did have this question. And it started a great dialogue of, you know, why would you do this? But it turned into a conversation. So if you have a question that's not an attack, feel free to ask. That's part of why we're here.
What is your advice to that closeted young man or woman who, I shouldn't say sexuality aside, but who is confused about where they go from here? Because you were both there. You were both in those worlds. All three of us were confined in that box. What is your advice to that person who listens to this podcast?
Go first.
Okay. I would say one of the most important, I think, moments of my life was when I realized I'm not straight. And this was after I said I came home from my mission and I had my first experience where I felt I really had an actual crush on someone, and it was a guy. And I realized this could, you know, be my new normal. And I felt like the whole world just opened up. There was all these possibilities that I had been repressing, all these aspects of myself that I had been trying to hide from myself. And as soon as I opened that door, I came to understand and love myself so much more. And that was such a freeing moment that I hope everyone who's on the LGBTQ spectrum can have for themselves when they understand and accept themselves.
Well, what kept me in the closet for so long was my surrounding culture. And that's something that people don't typically have control over. Exposing yourself to different ways of life, different people, getting outside of your social bubble, I think can be extremely eye-opening and empowering for someone wanting to set themselves free. But you know, a young person, 14, 15, doesn't really have that as an option on the table. Thank goodness for things like the internet and podcasts where you can have exposure to other people and you know, pierce that bubble and see outside of it. And that can give people the courage they might need to take a step. I actually, for me, the advice that I decided I would follow for myself was actually inspired by the Book of Mormon, where, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's Alma who suggests that you plant the Word of God like a seed, and you nourish it and culture it, and if it turns into something that, you know, swells within your breast and feels delicious to you, then how can it be a bad seed? But if it turns out to be something that you feel is poisonous or not bringing happiness or joy, then you can cast it aside, you know, uproot and try a different seed, a different direction. And so I would say I was willing to experiment with what I thought maybe was truth. Like, can I try a relationship with another man, even though that was counter what was my own personal expectations were and what the church's expectations were? Can I try it, do an experiment, and see how it fills my soul? And if it does, how can it be a bad seed? It must be something good, and embrace it. So that would be my advice, is to have a willingness to experiment and a willingness to maybe go down the wrong avenue for a little bit. If it is the wrong avenue, you will eventually start seeing, you know, no more streetlights, the dead ends, and you'll get a sense that maybe I should turn around and go down a different avenue.
That reminds me of a old conference talk. I think it was conference Boyd K. Packer. I rarely quote Boyd K. Packer in this space. But he had the Candle of the Lord talk, where he said, sometimes it's important for us to venture into the darkness to see that the way is lighted ahead. But it takes us walking a very dark tunnel, no illumination, no ability to see ahead. But it takes us walking into the darkness. And he says, even just for a few steps, to realize that the way is lighted ahead. And I really like that how that analogy works with what you just explained. And I love that the refrigerator beareth fruit.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. That's perfect. I will say with that, that's definitely what we've done. It might seem strange to say that entering into a same-sex relationship took a lot of faith, but I really feel that, I mean, it did. On my mission, I had a negative experience, and the biggest thing I learned from that was just that I had to choose things that were going to make me happy and choose that joy. And so I thought, I don't want to let anything get in the way of that, even if it's something a lot of people were telling me, you know, you have to do this or that. And so I saw an opportunity that I thought would bring me joy. And I had the faith that if I took that step into the dark, it would bear fruit. And I think we just haven't looked back.
That's true.
What is your advice? I know you both experienced positive experiences with your bishops. What advice do you have for church leaders who are more and more, as we've acknowledged through this podcast episode, experiencing and seeing interaction with the LGBT community? What is your advice to those church leaders?
This is a difficult one. I feel church leaders are put in a very awkward position. You've got policies that are mandated through manuals, and sometimes the church leader, their heart tells them not to follow a policy. And maybe my advice would be trust yourself more than you trust something that someone else has written for you to think. Trust your own heart. Listen to people, talk to people, and let their words touch you, and ignore the stuff that's in that manual. Just for a moment, at least.
Frankly, we could end the podcast right there. Honestly. That's... okay, sorry. Now you've got some big shoes to fill, Chad.
Yeah.
Expound.
It's just as simple as leading with love. If you really love someone, you're going to want to do what's best for them. And that's not what other people are telling you is best, but it's, you know, each individual is different. So as long as you really love the people that you serve in the leadership calling, you're going to find ways that are validating to help them. I think it's that simple.
Great advice from both of you. Anything that we haven't discussed that you want to talk about in the podcast? Anything we haven't brought up?
It's a good question. I could go on and on about asexuality, but I don't know if we really want to keep opening that can of worms. I want to say one more statistic that I think people are not aware of, that studies or surveys estimate that 1% of the population is on the asexual spectrum. And that seems like maybe not very much, but I always like to make this analogy. If you look at your social media followers, if you have, say, 1,000 followers, 10 of them are asexual. I think this is something that touches a lot of lives, but people just aren't even aware. And a lot of people, like, I wasn't even aware that was even a possibility until it was out there. So definitely be mindful of that and realize that just like any LGBTQ, you're going to bump into people that have that experience, and it's important to validate that.
You know, I think in full transparency and in all honesty, the thing that I learned most about this podcast episode is the fact that asexuality isn't, I'm wearing this hat of like the very straight, conservative Relief Society president who looks at this topic and says, oh, that's so icky, like it's so gay and icky, and this is so weird that I don't want to accept it. But the reality of asexuality is that it is both a homosexual and heterosexual experience. Mm-hmm. That it is a favor of no specific sexuality. It is an umbrella of its own, encompassing those forms of sexuality as well. That I don't want to say normal, but a more statistically numbered portion of the population will experience asexuality as well. That it isn't just a homosexuality topic. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was a little bit of an epiphany that I hadn't quite considered.
You might even think some religious extremists would think asexuality is our goal. Putting aside the natural man, not being driven by our lusts, getting to a point where I'm above that. And I don't know, it's probably an extreme view, but...
Oh no, more extreme would then be getting to the eunuchs. That just...
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's true.
But we're not going to bring the Old Testament into this.
Yes, please.
Anything else, Matt, from you?
Nothing's coming to mind. I became more open. Like when I was talking earlier, I don't know if I finished making the point about getting outside my bubble, outside my culture. For me, that meant leaving Utah. Got outside of Utah, came to Arizona, and I felt liberty. I felt like shackles had dropped off my wrists just by changing my culture. And for me, that was a wonderful change. And within a number of years of being here, I got to the point where I was starting to embrace the idea of dating, and then here comes Chad.
There he is. That's what good friends are for.
Exactly, yeah. We weren't looking for each other, but we found each other.
Yeah.
I think that might be one of the most common themes in relationships that become compatible, is that when you're not looking and when you are focusing on myself, I like to use this analogy, like when you're flying in an airplane, when the oxygen mask falls, you secure your own oxygen mask first before worrying about all the other passengers in the airplane. Mm-hmm. And once yours is secure, then you can start helping other people. Mm-hmm. And it's that concept that when you love yourself, you become more able to love others.
Agreed, yeah.
And that's where that compatibility can begin.
Mm-hmm. And wherever you are in that process, you just have to acknowledge that and appreciate that and understand there's progress, right? It took us both a long time to get to where we are.
Any regrets?
No, not at all.
Because I bring that up as a little bit of a loaded question, because so often we hear, especially in religious circles, that everything on this side of the aisle demands that you lose spiritual experiences, demands that you lose happiness, that the intrinsic qualities of yourself will diminish or lose worth because you are succumbing to something that has been foretold by prophets and scripture. Is that the truth?
I believed that for a long time, but it hasn't been my experience. No. Once we really... Mm-hmm.
No, it's not appropriate to make someone feel shameful for the simple fact that they don't fit a mold. Those are not good, healthy ideas.
I think we've had some nuggets of good truth in this podcast episode. I am super grateful for the time that both of you have sat down to share a little bit of your experience and some truth. Thank you. Thanks, Chad, for bringing them along.
Happy to. Happy to participate.
Thanks for having me join last minute.
Yeah, in full disclosure, Matt wasn't overly thrilled or even aware
I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
to take this role.
Yeah, so this is a good chance to throw him. This is your baptism of fire. Welcome to the lion's den, Daniel.
Thank you. The lions have been okay so far. I haven't tried to bite me.
I think you fared well. Again, thank you. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. And I appreciate your story. Now, you had mentioned earlier on that you're open for questions.
Yeah. I anticipate that there's probably going to be quite a few questions. I understand often in the podcast, you'll invite people to send questions that you can kind of send to the interviewees. So I'm open to that.
Absolutely.
Same. No, not a problem.
So if you have a question for Matt and Chad, the easiest way of asking that question is if you are watching on our Facebook version of this video, so the video version, comment it below. And we're going to follow social media all together. And we will watch those questions and answer and respond, because I think this is a really great topic that most people aren't fully aware of. So comment those questions below if you are watching on the video version, and if you are participating on an audio version through one of the podcast channels like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or one of the others, you are welcome to jump over to one of our social media channels. We are available on YouTube at Latter Gay Stories and also on our Facebook page at Latter Gay Stories. The podcast version, both in audio and visual, our video form, is also available online on our website at LatterGayStories.com. latter-gay-stories.org. The Latter Gay Stories podcast is your opportunity to inspect the intersection of sexuality and reality where they meet at LDS Street and LGBTQ Avenue. But most importantly, episodes just like this are provided to you to give you the opportunity to continue writing your Latter Gay Story.
This episode is a production of Latter Gay Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter Gay Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Make a donation now by texting the word STORIES to 77948. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter Gay Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at lattergaystories.org.